United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
We're going to talk today about women in higher education with a specific case study of a single college, Gettysburg College in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and try to understand why it took a long time before women were admitted to the hallowed halls. Our guest is Ms. Jean LeGros. She's a retired director of alumni relations at Gettysburg College, where she was also a major gift officer at the college and later at Gettysburg Seminary and also at the Majestic Theater, where recently they raised a large amount of money to guarantee the future of that wonderful theater here in small town America. Jean, what prompted your interest in this topic? And you've done at least two different theses over the last few years on exactly this subject. What prompted your interest?
Well, I'm a Gettysburg, as you noted, I'm a Gettysburg College alumna and also Director of Alumni Relations Emerita at Gettysburg College. And so I'm frequently asked the question, when did Gettysburg become a coeducational college? So that was the main thing that prompted my interest. And also I have done previous research about pioneering women at the college. And so this just seemed to be a way to build on that.
And you were comparing this, weren't you, when you did this with the general milieu of America at the time? For example, the 19th Amendment had come into play, and the college had undertaken a $1 million project, and the people who donated it said, can our daughters go now? So it wasn't just the narrow who, what, where, and why.
That's right. I looked specifically for this thesis at the years 1919 to 1935. And one of the two reasons that I started with 1919, one is because the 19th Amendment had just passed through Congress. Women had been given the right to vote. And also, the college had undertaken a major fundraising endeavor, and Lutheran families had contributed with the expectation that their daughters could attend.
Am I jumping ahead? If I am, just give me a quick answer, and we'll go back to it. Both of us know the situation in this case study a little better than most. Some of us know, some of us know a little, someone like you know a lot, but the college was founded by the same person who founded the seminary. Was there a connection, and does that have something to do with women?
Yes, there is a connection. Samuel Simon Schmucker founded Gettysburg Seminary in 1826 and the college in 1832. And one of the reasons he primarily founded the college is to educate young men for the seminary. He realized that many young men did not have the proper educational background. So he founded the college to educate men. However, nowhere in the charter does it say specifically that it's a college for men or a college for Lutherans.
So there are other factors that we need to talk about as we move along.
Yes.
When you said it was founded in 1832, mm-hmm. and by 1932, there was a reassertion of this is a men's college only, and it was mm-hmm. around 1952 or so when it was finally... It was a long time is what I'm saying.
Yes. The answer to the question, when did Gettysburg College mm-hmm. become co-ed, the short answer is that the first two women graduated in 1894. Their names were Cora Hartman and Rebecca Himes. But the longer, far more complicated answer is that it wasn't until 1935, so more than 40 years later, that women were admitted on a permanent basis.
I made it too long. I'm sorry.
More than
100 years,
until after the college was founded, right? And so during that period, until 1935, women were considered, the young ladies who were enrolled at that period were considered just day students. They didn't have the same privileges as men. And in that time, between 1919 and 1935, there was a decade when the trustees voted to ban admitting women, but then they kept postponing acting on this. So in mm-hmm. other words, they'd say, in 1923, they passed a resolution saying in 1925, no more women. Mm-hmm. But then they wouldn't enact on that. So today we would say they kicked the can down the road. But keeping in mind that women were enrolled at the college at that time. So then they were thriving. They were elected to Phi Beta Kappa. They were class valedictorians, salutatorians. Oh. They organized their own clubs and athletic teams. They even petitioned to attend chapel. But they weren't, for some reason, they were just invisible to the president, who always referred to all the students as young men, even though 10% of them were women, and they were invisible to a majority of board members. Yeah. Also.
Now, I want to live in an age, Jean, when students actually petition to go to chapel.
It was a different era.
Those were the days. What were the stumbling blocks to the, I mean, we mentioned one. Schmucker, the founder, intended the college to be a preparatory school for the ministry. And putting this all in context, we got to remember that in early 19th century, the level of education was far less than it is now. So going to college was really something. And then to go to seminary beyond college, you can see why the physicians and the ministers in town were the most educated. But that was one of the factors. Another one might have been that the male population was far more supportive of men going into the, but anyway, we get on the later.
Well, you're absolutely right about the first, that and the president and the board just clung to the characterization of a male college. Another very interesting factor was Grace College. Now, Grace was a proposed Lutheran college for women near Washington, D.C. And as long as Grace was being planned, the Gettysburg College Board didn't see the need to admit women because they kept saying, well, Grace is coming along, and so women can go there. And just another reason was the economy, until 1929, obviously with the market crash, the economy was robust, and therefore women's tuition dollars weren't really needed.
After a while, there might be economic stimulus for women in college.
Well, so tipping the balance towards full co-education, the next question would be, okay, well, we know they were admitted. What tipped the balance? One was the economy. All of a sudden, with the crash, the college was struggling financially. Men weren't coming in the record numbers, and so women's tuition dollars were needed. The second was the Gettysburg Academy, which was kind of the preparatory department of the college, was also failing economically. So by 1935, the president and the board saw admitting women on a permanent basis as a way to balance the budget and to make financial ends meet. They needed the women's tuition dollars. They closed the academy in the spring of 1935, and it reopened in the fall as the women's division of the college, so its facilities could be put to good use. And then we talked about Grace College. It never opened. It, too, was a victim of the Great Depression. It never opened its doors. So admitting women gave President Hansen a way to promote Gettysburg to Lutherans as a college that admitted women.
What was a small point in there? What was the need for a preparatory school in 1832 and beyond? What were these academies? Is that because the high schools were inadequate to send young men and women to the college?
Yes, that was the primary reason.
Wow.
And a number of young, the first women did come from the academy.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it wasn't just that the public schools were inadequate. There weren't a lot of public schools.
Yeah.
And so, but that's a very good point. As the public schools became more prevalent and the teaching and education was very good, there was less and less of a need to go to a private academy.
We had a famous young lady seminary. The building still exists. In fact, was used by the college and the seminary in its early days right here in Gettysburg. So women were going to some of these preparatory schools. They were not all simply uneducated, but frustrated sometimes in reaching any farther than a prep school.
Yeah.
We're talking to Jean LeGros. She is a retired director of alumni relations at Gettysburg College and has gone on to be a major gift officer at the seminary and at the Majestic Theater in Gettysburg. And we're talking about a case study of women in higher education. What were the stumbling blocks to their moving on up? This case study centers on Gettysburg College, but it could very easily be extended elsewhere. I'm Jerry Christensen, and you're listening to the Seminary Explorers. Speaking about extending this beyond, at the time these decisions, Gettysburg may have been a little bit late, but there were at least two categories of schools, those that in their charters were all male or all female. Mm-hmm. And some of those existed until the 1960s and 70s and probably still are so today. They had a different mission, right? And some of the Lutheran colleges, even or so small denominational schools, of which I was familiar, had no such thing in their charter and received women and men from the time they opened their doors. But so far, your point is that because it had this tradition of being all male to prepare for the seminary, and they didn't need the money, they took all men. And then it was 100 years before they changed it at all. What were some of the stumbling blocks to a permanent
Well,
education?
I think what we had talked about the the fact that Grace College was on the table, the fact that it was just, as you say, understood, Gettysburg was understood to be a college for men.
But then who and what finally turned the tide?
Well, the economic factors of the day really contributed, the fact that Grace College didn't materialize. But I really want to argue that there was, and I did argue that there was another factor, and that was there was significant pushback to the ban on admitting women that was on the table for 10 years. And this pushback came from a number of voices. And every time, you know, they'd get up to a deadline of, okay, no more women admitted, mm-hmm. there would be a flurry of petitions and mm-hmm. voices and letters. And of course, a lot of these voices were Lutheran voices, either pastors writing to say, there are girls at my congregation who really want to attend Gettysburg College, but if they can't enroll, then they're going to go to another Lutheran college that does admit women, or even worse, go to a college that is not Lutheran affiliated. So, I mean, that was one voice. The synods were the surrounding synods were sent a lot of petitions and very forceful letters to the board saying, you know, we really think you need to reconsider this.
A positive voice from the church. I want to underline that. It isn't always dragging us back into the past. It's a positive voice for moving forward.
Right.
Weren't there individual women too?
Yes, the women themselves. They organized and pushed back with petitions and meetings. Current students sent petitions. Even girls at the local high school drew up a petition and signed it because they said, where are we going to go to college? I mean, many of them obviously could not afford to go away. Mm-hmm. They wanted to live here in town. Where are we going to go if we can't go to Gettysburg College? The Gettysburg College alumni organized as well. And Margaret Himes Seebach, who was one of the first two women to graduate, mm-hmm. who I mentioned earlier, she organized this petition signing, and it was signed by women, Gettysburg College women graduates in 20 states. So this was a far-reaching, yes, exactly. And then prominent local citizens also, like Elsie Singmaster.
Well, I was wondering when we did Elsie Singmaster. Yes, please go on.
Elsie really, you know, all along had been very forceful in her plea for co-education at Gettysburg College and had written to several Lutheran magazines raising this issue. And here in town spoke to various civic groups about the importance of this.
This is a clash of the titans, is it not? I mean, I don't think I would want to sit in the president's office and have Elsie Singmaster knock on my door. She's a formidable person, but also an established, distinguished, internationally known author.
That is exactly right. And she and President Hansen really got into it back and forth with letters. And some of them, I should say that I examined all the primary source material for this and went through all the records of letters and board minutes and all. And, you know, it was clear that Elsie was a force to be reckoned with. Mary Stukenberg, who had founded the Women's League at Gettysburg College, And that was primarily to raise funds, at the time, was to raise funds for the YMCA building. She became a real convert to the need to educate women and to become co-educational as well, and raise money for one of the residence halls with Elsie. So there were just a number of voices that really played into this, and until the board and the president reversed their decision in 1935, thereby admitting women on a...
Hansen became president remarkably in 1923, and served until 1952. That's almost 30 years.
I know.
There were a tendency those days to have longer presidencies than shorter ones. But that's got to be a mixed review on his case, doesn't it? There are a lot of positive things, the building of the chapel and so on.
Yes.
But women were high on it, but not high in the sense of getting them to college.
That's right.
Were there any personal reasons, or he just thought he was continuing the right tradition?
I can't speak to if there were any personal reasons, but I think it was really that he thought he was carrying on the tradition. But then he all of a sudden said, there's a way to make all of this work.
Yes.
Now, to be fair, I did not look at this beyond 1935. So I don't really know what the last 17 years of his presidency were. But I can tell you that in the first part of his presidency, even though, as I said, 10% of the student body was made up of women who were doing very well, he always, always referred to the college students as his boys and his men. How would the women have felt with that when they were in an audience and hearing the student body referred to as all male?
We kind of get the impression that from 1919, the 19th Amendment, 19 on, we have a general swell in American culture for women's rights. And we also think back to the women's movement that started up in the Finger Lakes earlier in the century. And then it was mainly the pressure to get women to be able to vote. It was all part of a century and a half of helping women to break the glass ceiling, and we're still in it now, and we're giving one case study of that struggle in the event of Gettysburg College and Gettysburg. I was pleased to notice that, and it must have been very interesting, that you did a considerable amount of comparison to other colleges, or at least as part of your background, and also for the YMCA and other such institutions at the time. Were there similar, what was your conclusion when you looked at this material? That it was a similar struggle going on?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, some schools were admitted women from the very beginning, but I think that this, I really can't speak to other colleges, but that this was just part of a larger movement. The YMCA was a very popular movement across many colleges.
Oh, yes.
And the YMCA building was built by the funds raised by the Women's League at Gettysburg.
By the women.
Yeah. As a place where young men could gather and all. Now, interestingly enough, once it became co-education, from 1935 on, it was known as the Student Christian Association building and not the Young Men's Christian Association building. So that really changed.
And you also, this is even more interesting to me, you interviewed most of the people involved are no longer living and not among us, but you did interview the children, other family members of several of those women who were profiled in your project.
I did, indeed. Children or nieces and nephews. One family told me that their mother was in this cohort that I studied, and they lived in York, and her parents took time off from work to come here for an all-campus activity, and President Hansen just kept referring to the students as his boys. Mm-hmm. And the parents were just dumbfounded by this and really, you know, not very happy that here was their daughter sitting with them in the audience. So this is something that has been passed down through the family for all these years. So obviously it really left an impression on them.
And it must have meant something that they actually were in, if not in the forefront, at least breaking through breaking a barrier that surrounded women in higher education in those days.
Yes, yes.
You know, and that tradition has been passed down these families, that they're grateful that their mothers and grandmothers and great-grandmothers had that opportunity and led the way.
I'm grateful, as a Gettysburg College alumna, I'm very grateful that these women came before me and really, did so well academically and did so much for the institution and were finally recognized and admitted on a permanent basis. Today, Gettysburg College is about 53% women. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. We've come a long way.
Then you broke into the seminary as well as a non-ordained track student and did two projects here, so you've gone the whole route, the whole race course. We've been talking to Jean LeGros. She's the retired director of alumni relations at Gettysburg College, major gift officer at the college and seminary, and at the Majestic Theater in Gettysburg. And we've talked about a case study of women in higher education that turned out fairly well. Thank you for listening. I'm Jerry Christensen. Have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.